Hello, and welcome to the October edition of the IHS Market Lithium Chemicals podcast. I'm Nick Kovics, the Service Director for Lithium and Battery Materials. I'm joined by our global team based out of Houston, London, and Beijing. Taking a step back and observing the market at a high level, one could almost see lithium acting like a conventional commodity chemical. The typical commodity cycle is oversupply, leading to price declines, consolidation, and then rationalization. Now I say almost, as we have oversupply, price declines, and consolidation, but not rationalization. In fact, we expect the opposite to occur. With the current consolidation we're seeing, quality assets that are struggling with finances are being acquired or invested in by more established, better funded market participants. We believe that this consolidation by established market participants will lead to a more disciplined market where expansions will continue as needed rather than in a race to be first. And this will lead to less volatility in pricing as oversupply and shortages become less severe. In other words, the market will begin to mature. At the same time, we believe that lithium chemicals are still in the specialty chemical niche and not yet commoditized. So we're not saying that the market is mature, but getting closer from a commodity perspective. So with that, let's start off with Priscilla talking about supply.
Thanks, Nick. This month, many companies had a quieter September while recovering from the August wave of acquisitions, halts in expansions in production, and strategies to compensate for declining lithium prices. However, a few companies continued their lithium plans in anticipation of long-term demand, albeit with adjustments to buffer their cash flows for the short-term market weakness. Perhaps the biggest achievement in Australia is the startup of Tianqi Lithium's Kwinana Lithium Hydroxide Plant, the world's largest lithium hydroxide plant outside of China, on September 10th. Even the historical importance of Australia's first lithium hydroxide plant opening was dampened by Tianqi's subsequent halt of its second phase expansion. The partially built second stage work has been frozen to focus on completing the ramp up of the first stage. However, this could not be a coincidence, given the oversupply of lithium compounds and market weakness. Plans were also adjusted in Argentina. The joint venture project between Lithium Americas Core and Ganfeng Lithium in Cauchari Olaroz, Argentina, has completed its feasibility study and increased its production target. However, Lithium Americas also announced that they've decreased its production target for the Thacker Pass project in Nevada in order to take the extra funds and use it for its Cauchari Olaroz project. Continuing from last month's theme of acquisitions, joint ventures, and other agreements, West Farmers completed the takeover of Kinmen Resources. China's Contemporary Amperex Technology, which is also CATL, also formed an agreement with Pilbara Minerals to pay Pilbara Australian $55 million in exchange for an 8.5% stake. Tianqi Lithium, due to its new lithium hydroxide plant in Australia, signed an offtake agreement with Norfolk. Finally, Livent Corporation formed a joint agreement with junior miner E3 Metals to contribute up to $5.5 million and its technical expertise in exchange for a 19.9% stake. Sionia Lithium also joined the bid for North American lithium assets. Thank you.
Thanks, Priscilla. It'll be interesting to see if Kidman's strategy changes at all now that West Farmers is in control. Now, when I spoke about mature markets, well, we also have mature companies. And considering that Kidman was founded less than 10 years ago, compared to West Farmers, that has been operating for over 100 years, we now have a company in charge that knows a thing or two about commodity cycles and market discipline. Next, let's move on to Lucas, who's going to talk about demand and give us a little perspective on cathode chemistry trends and what that means. Lucas?
IHS Markit forecasts NMC chemistry to become a dominant cathode chemistry in the years to come, owing to its superior technical properties and cost advantages, particularly for electric vehicle applications, but also for use in grid storage, such as Tesla's Powerwalls. Industry news from the last month seems to reconfirm this trend. Umicore, a cathode materials producer, has agreed to supply battery maker LG Chem with NMC cathode materials at a total volume of 125,000 metric tons over several years. Tesla, so far reliant on rival NCA cathode chemistry as applied in the Panasonic batteries powering Tesla's EVs, reportedly plans to start applying NMC cathode chemistry in its new models. This information is unconfirmed and would not deserve a mention were it not for the reports of advanced talks with LG Chem for the supplies of batteries for Tesla's Shanghai Gigafactory and a paper published by a research group strongly affiliated with the automaker, highlighting research and development activities on batteries with extremely high durability based on NMC cathode chemistry. To clarify, LG Chem does not produce batteries with NCA cathode chemistry, and it would be extremely difficult for the company to switch into this segment. Further, the supply of cathode materials from Umicore seems to be clearly destined to boost the availability of the NMC cathode materials as in preparation for battery production ramp-up, since LG Chem already produces NMC cathode materials in-house and invested strongly in its own cathode materials production capacities. The prospect of gaining a large customer such as Tesla could generate a call for external supplies. Nonetheless, if we look at the market as it is now, the demand for lithium compounds coming from NMC producers in China remains subdued. The rally in the price of cobalt, which went from approximately $36,500 per ton in early September to $39,120 on 1st October on the London Metal Exchange, and overall higher prices of nickel on month-over-month basis, it all put the pressure on NMC cathode materials producers to increase prices. The result was an additional blow to already weak demand for NMC cathodes since subsidies were phased out. This situation has a visible impact on demand for lithium hydroxide, a compound of choice particularly for NMC cathode materials with high nickel content and therefore high energy density, which is desirable for new EV models with higher driving ranges. This development led to the price spread between hydroxide and carbonate to narrow on the spot market. Conversely, the demand for lithium carbonate has been stimulated by an uptake in demand for LFP cathodes for EVs, grid storage, and electronic devices, and a significant improvement in demand for batteries typically used in electronic devices based on LCO and LMO cathode chemistries as the Christmas shopping season approaches.
Thanks, Lucas. It'll be interesting to see how NCA versus NMC plays out for Tesla, as our technology roadmap clearly has NMC as a dominant architecture in general in the market going forward. Now, the NMC versus LFP shift is interesting from a regional perspective too. And this may be more of an Asia story, which is a good segue for Lily in Beijing.
Thanks, Nick. As what Priscilla mentioned previously, this month, we continue seeing companies' hot expansions and slow production to compensate for declining lithium prices. But we also see companies actively plan for a long-term growing market. For example, China's Tianqi Lithium entered a long-term offtake agreement with Swedish battery producer Northvolt from year 2020 until 2025. The annual volume is expected to be 6-10% of the annual output from Tianqi's lithium hydroxide plant in Kwinana, Western Australia. In addition to Northvolt, Tianqi has also secured agreements to supply lithium hydroxide to LG Chem, SK Innovation, and EcoPro BM. By far, Tianqi Lithium has tied up at most 50% of its production of lithium hydroxide in these new agreements. In addition to Australia's capacity expansion, Tianqi is planning its new lithium chemicals capacity in domestic China as well. The company has a two-phase lithium project in Anju, Suining City, Sichuan Province, where Tianqi's headquarters locates. Phase 1 is 20,000 ton per annum battery-grade carbonate capacity. Construction will be completed in late 2020. Phase 2 is 23,000 ton per annum lithium chloride and a 20,000 ton per annum battery-grade lithium hydroxide plants. Construction will start in 2020 and complete in 2023. All the series capacity plans reflect Tianqi actively deploy itself for dynamic long-term lithium demand, and it also lays the foundation of Suining City for the reputation of China Lithium's capital. At the meantime, we're also closely on track with other China converters' lithium chemical expansions this year. China Shengtun Group plants 100,000 tons per annum lithium chemical capacity, among which 60,000 per annum capacity will be constructed in Suining City by its newly registered subsidiary Suining Shengxin Lithium. Another 40,000 tons per annum will be developed by its subsidiary Sichuan Zhiyuan Lithium. Construction will be completed by mid-2020. We noticed that Zhiyuan Lithium adjusted its lithium chemical expansion from 10,000 tons per annum hydroxide and 10,000 tons per annum carbonate capacity to 15,000 tons per annum and 25,000 tons per annum, respectively. To echo a comment, Snake, it is interesting that Zhiyuan Lithium expanding carbonate more than hydroxide, considering our expectations that hydroxide demand will overtake carbonate after 2022. I think it speaks the fact that there are both global and regional trends one to monitor. For example, low-cost LFP cathode batteries making sense in China, in particular for electric buses. In contrast, large capacity NMC are preferred for Western automakers. Perhaps this regional difference suggests Zhiyuan Lithium focusing on domestic market, while Tianqi looks globally. In addition to market trends, I think the capability of producing high quality of lithium hydroxide also contributes to company's expansion plan. The very high quality of lithium hydroxide requires a very high degree of plant's automation level, feedback quality, and consistency. So there are actually very few converters are able to produce high quality lithium hydroxide. Another top lithium converter, Ganfeng Lithium, also adjusted its lithium hydroxide capacity from 25,000 tons per annum to 50,000 tons per annum to meet the long-term fast-growing global demand. Regardless, all expansion plans and adjustments this year reflect the fast-growing market in battery and battery materials sectors, driven by long-term EV demand globally. Next month, we will update an overview of the converter's most recent capacity and expansion plan and adjustments.
Thanks, Lily. I'm sure that our readers will look forward to your insight into conversion capacities next month. I know you've been doing a lot of research on this topic. So with that, I want to say thanks again to our listeners, and farewell until next month.